This is Doc Mike, host of Right on the Left Coast podcast. This is a podcast about homestead living at the Ravenwood Homestead here in Oregon. We share our experiences and discuss topics that may affect living the homestead lifestyle. Hey there, this is Doc Mike. Thanks for joining me here live on Real Liberty Media, or if you're downloading the podcast, I sure appreciate it. If you are a part of any social media, would you please post that we're live over here on Real Liberty Media and see if we can get some more people showing up over here and chatting stuff. That'd be awesome. This is Right on the Left Coast, a podcast about the Ravenwood Homestead, where I live here and what we do here. And I hope you enjoy it. I really hope you enjoy it. I just have fun doing it. So join me. It's a little journey I'm on. We are on. Man, we got a bunch of, you know, I let me finish this intro. Let's see. Did that. Behind the Woodshed, Hal Anthony, tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern, every Sunday, Hal Anthony gives you 2 hours of jam-packed full of information. I'm telling you, you know, you got to find time to listen to him, download his podcast, and just kind of check him out. He sure shares a lot of information and knowledge, man. That guy is great. Guy has a good way of tying things together, too. Really puts a lot of time into that two-hour podcast, just getting it ready to go and doing it. And you can catch my Discerning Observer podcast this Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern. This is what I think I'm going to do here. I said, I'm going to be disgusting. I'm going to be disgusting on Wednesday. No, I'm not. I'm going to be discussing the extermination of the human race. It all started making sense to me recently, and I'm going to share my thoughts backed up with facts from the world around us. And really, you know, I was thinking today about fear-mongering, because we just got done with this whole Titan sub debacle, which really turned out to be a debacle. I don't know how many people actually thought any of those people were alive any of the days that they were reporting. I think everybody pretty much knew they were dead. I think, but you know, the world was kind of looking for some kind of miracle or something, but everybody was sure distracted by this submersible, this mini submersible that, you know, goes down to look at the Titanic. And, anyway, I was kind of thinking about all the hate mongering that goes on and I was thinking, man, sometimes I get tied up into that too, mainly on the Homestead Show, because I'm always trying to encourage people to grow your own food. But you know what? I don't have to fear monger. I think there's a lot of reasons to grow your own food, to be responsible for your own food without fear mongering, without saying, look, there's inflation coming, there's food shortage coming, the crops are not doing well, there's a fertilizer shortage, diesel prices are high, I don't have to do all of that. I think it's a good idea to grow some food for yourself, or to be a part of growing food for yourself, or to support your local ags, your local community farms, or just local farms in general. Community-supported agriculture, I think, is a great idea. We have one place nearby that does that, and you can pay a fee like for 6 months or a year and just go pick up your basket every week. And I think that's a good way to do it. You know, you can see their operation. You can talk to them personally. You know, the farmers, as great as I think farmers are for producing food for the world, especially here in the United States, we export a lot of food. If you really think about it, they don't care about the consumer, the end consumer, those of us who purchase their products. And I'm not saying they're heartless. I'm just saying, man, they're trying to make a living, right? They're trying to make a living. That's what they're trying to do. And and it's tough to make a living in farming. This is not like you're rolling in the dough every year. I mean, as you've heard me talk about over the past few years, you know, sometimes you have successes and sometimes you don't. 2 years ago, I was praising this little tiny 4-year-old apple tree that just pushed out a ton of fruit. And last year, it didn't do anything. Well, it's a good thing I wasn't depending on apples, and I'm just kind of speaking metaphorically here. But it's a good thing I wasn't depending on that one tree to sustain me for a year, because it produced nothing. I think there was one apple on it, and it may have been from the year before. So, I don't know. It could have been. Oh, I'm going to put the, I got to transition the camera on, because we have the what is this called again? Brooks Falls, Katmai National Park, Alaska, 2003, powered by explore.org. You know, they got the camera up and rolling live. I don't think there's going to be any bears there for a while. I haven't seen any in a few days. I've kind of been checking on it. But this is where the Fat Bear Contest is held every year. So if you want to be a part of it this year, get on this website, man. Just look for Explore Live Nature Cams, and they have the Brooks Falls Katmai National Park, Alaska 2023 bear cams there. And you can watch these bears just grow enormously over the next couple months before they go back into hibernation. Now, first of all, we have to wait for the salmon to run. I mean, maybe the salmon are running. Maybe there's a salmon here or there that's coming up the falls. But for the most part, there's not, because otherwise this place would be loaded with bear, and it's not. I mean, there's not one single bear here anywhere or there anywhere. Excuse me. Probably in just a little bit, this is going to be kind of weird too. I should have thought about this before. I'm going to take you on a walk around the, not the inside of the house, the outside of the house. Because I've been wanting to show you guys this mullein field I have now. I'm so happy. You know, mullein is a crazy plant. It's a ground reclamation plant. It moves in when the ground is too crappy to support anything else. And I'm gonna show you this video, but of course it's a podcast, so you can't see it. And I'm not live on Rumble tonight. So that was kind of a stupid idea. Maybe I'll do it again next week, and I'll do it live on Rumble. Because it takes a minute to set up Rumble. Like, it takes, like, I don't know, it takes 20 minutes to, not to set it up, but you got to set it up, and then they say, okay, you can start broadcasting at whatever time, and, you know, whatever. I didn't do that. So maybe I won't. That'd be funny. Maybe I won't take you on that walk because I'm not live video. I don't know, man. I do have a ton of stuff to talk about, so, you know, it won't be a bad thing. It was like 6 minutes of video I took. I walked around with the GoPro and a selfie stick, but I didn't take any pictures of myself, thank God, or video of myself. I just wanted to show, when I say it's a jungle up here, I'm not kidding. Things have grown. You know, there's that big spurt of growth, like right after spring hits and the sun starts warming up the earth and the ground starts getting warm and stuff just takes off. And then you get a little bit of rain and a week or two of sun and a little bit of rain. And, you know, it just has been exploding. And but this mullein, I'm not kidding. I don't even know how many mullein plants I have because I have too many. I haven't counted them. Number two, the second year mullein plants have gigantic leaves on them, which is going to be fantastic for, you know, making some products out of that. And I wanted to kind of put in a little reminder here. If you haven't ever been to the Great American, All-American Sun Oven site, you should look them up, because that sun oven can actually also be used to dry things. And I'm going to use it to dry those mullein leaves. and package them up. And then Rochelle was telling me that the local, one of the local health food stores actually buys from local growers. So I might figure out, you know, what I have to do to sell them some. It's kind of funny. Like, I think a lot of people don't know about mullein and all the benefits it has. I've covered it before. I think I'm going to, you know, see if I can sell some to them and to other people. I mean, I'd give some away, you know, cause it's kind of funny. It's like, yeah, I guess if you can go back about 100 years and say, it'd be like selling weed to people. You know, it grows all over the place by itself. It's not like, you know, today we have these big operations to grow weed that's, you know, hybrid weed that does all kinds of stuff. Marijuana, I'm talking about, just in case anybody doesn't know. But hell, I mean, it used to grow in ditches, you know, they used to call it ditch weed. And, you know, it'd be like selling that to people. But here's the thing, mullein doesn't grow all over the place. It grows in very specific soil. In fact, when my friend pointed out to me, talked to me about this 2 years ago, God dang, it's been that long. Because I had that chronic cough, and I looked into it, and I saw pictures of it, and I was like, Jesus, I think I have one of those plants on my property somewhere. And I had to go looking for it, and sure enough, I found it. Well, actually, I think Rochelle or Crystal told me where it was, and I found it, and I was like, okay, we got to protect this plant, man. We got to, you know, like, you know, this plant is a good medicinal plant. Has a lot of good things going on with it, and we're going to pick some of the buds and flowers, blossoms, and we're going to harvest some of these leaves, and you know we're going to use this. So we got to don't let the dogs pee on it, you know. Don't let the wind blow it over, whatever, because they're tall, man. Wait till you see these. I'm not kidding. It's crazy. And and now there's just like so many. I mean, I did spread seed from the first one, and the last year was the second year. I had a handful of plants, like five or six. Now, I'm not kidding. I don't know how many I have. It's 20 or 30 or 40, something like, it's a crazy number of mullein plants. And the one I've mentioned before, that I got some good video of, and it's already on the computer, so I'm not going to lose it. Oh shit! I shouldn't have said that, and I shouldn't have said that. But it's like a tree. I'm not kidding. The stalk. So this is what happened. That one plant, the one I'm talking about, that you will see in this video today, started as a first year plant last year. So I don't think they normally mature and produce, you know, second year growth the first year. I think that's what I've read. I think that's kind of true. Well, because of this weird pattern of weather we had last year, and we had, like, when the season was changing from summer to fall, this thing shot up and decided it was going to do second year growth the first year. And I was like, well, that's really weird. Well, that's not going to last because, you know, it's its first year. There's no way that this plant is going to produce flowers and survive because it's late in the year. Well, that damn plant lived through, I don't know how much snow and a couple of ice storms and wind and rain. And every time, like Rochelle and I had sit in the hot tub and like, Jesus, that plant is still there. It's still growing. It's still alive. Like, I don't know how alive it would be in the middle of winter, but it was still standing. And I was just thinking, oh, that thing's got to be dead. Oh, no. No, no, no. This year, when it started kind of warming up, you know, when the sun started making its swing to the north, I know that's not exactly how it happens, but that plant started growing again. And it just fattened out. You know, the stalk is about as big as my forearm, which is, well, I'm not saying anything about my forearms. But yeah, I mean, it's a big fat heavily stocked, like trunk. It's not, it's no longer a plant. It has a trunk. It's pretty heavy duty. Anyway, I'm really excited about it. It has about 25 spears on it, flower spears on it. And I know you won't believe me till you see it, but you will see it. It's incredible. So I'm pretty excited about the whole mullein patch. And then right next to that is comfrey. And I kind of showed you the landscaping and how it's kind of growing out of control. Still looks really nice. It's very pretty around here this time of year with all the different birds, which I talked about last on the last show, and the plants and everything, man. It's just such a beautiful environment right here. And I don't know how many snakes we have, but I've seen five, you know, a couple gophers, a couple garter snakes. So unfortunately, in some ways, the environment is healthy enough to support those snakes, because what that means is there's little rodents running around, which I already know. You know, you see the mice and the field mice and shrews and gophers and stuff like that. But hey, the snakes are reproducing, so they're going to take care of it. There will be a balance at some point where there's just enough, you know, rodents to feed the snakes. And there will be a balance there. And, you know, I'm always glad to see a snake wherever I am. Luckily, we don't have a lot of poisonous snakes in Oregon, at least on the western side of Oregon. I've heard there's some coastal rattlesnake or something. I've never seen one, which doesn't mean they don't exist. I've never seen Bigfoot either, but I'm pretty sure that Bigfoot exists. Yeah, I'm always glad to see snakes. There was a snake at work, too, and it was always outside the back door this in the last couple of weeks, and somebody injured it, or it got injured somehow, like injured in the head, and it ended up dying. And I was like, man, that's really sad. I hope nobody actually killed that thing. But, you know, because I just love having snakes around. I don't love snakes. I love what they do, because I don't like rodents. So snakes benefit from my lack of admiration for rodents. I know rodents probably have some function in the world, but I don't know, rather not have them, that's for sure. Okay, where do we go from here? I hope you guys all are doing well. I'm not kidding. It's just a tough time. I think in general, maybe people, it seems like there's a lot of stress one way or the other. You know, no matter what you're doing in life, no matter how comfortable you are, I mean, I'm pretty damn comfortable. I have such a great life right here on the homestead. We don't even like to think about going anywhere, honestly, because the environment here is so beautiful. We don't really feel like we need to go anywhere to get away from here and go, you know, experience the great outdoors or anything. It's right here. I mean, I'm going to tell you something. This is the craziest thing. I work 3 miles from here. So I have a very short trip to work and back. If you've seen the Moto podcast, you've seen how short of a distance it is to my work. And I walked out of the office one day last week, this past week, and I heard an osprey. Now, I know it's an osprey because I've heard ospreys before, you know, like a lot of times, been up close and personal around ospreys and eagles and, you know, all of those things. And I look up and there are 5 osprey flying over the office, the dental office, like within 2 blocks, they're just cruising around. And I've seen this before. And I'm not going to say this is exactly what they were doing, but I've seen this before. And this is my assumption, is the parents or parent take the kids out on their early flights and they're talking to them constantly. They're just like chattering to them and screeching at them, and they're moving, you know, from place to place. And the parents are really high, and the 3 there were three, at least three youngsters. It was either a single parent and four youngsters, or two parents and three youngsters, but there were five osprey flying right over my head. Now, if you've seen some past videos, you know that there's a river that runs right across the street from the office. So they have everything that they need there, you know, fish and whatever else they use the water for. But I thought it was so cool. And so I started to go back in the office, and I ran into one of the assistants. I go, come out here. You got to see this real quick. I go, because you won't see this. Yeah, this is not something you're going to see all the time. And just to share that moment with somebody else and let them see, look, this is what's going on. You got three juveniles and one or two parents up here kind of guiding them on their early flight. You know, it's like, hey, here's the river over here. You know, we do other stuff in other parts of this, you know, area, but here's the river. This is where we get our food. And they're talking, you know, like, I don't know what they're saying. I don't speak osprey, but they're doing their thing, man, right there in the two blocks over the office. And they were there for like 10 minutes while I was there. And just being able to share that moment with somebody who is really young, 21, 22 years old. And so maybe if she ever hears that sound again, or looks in the sky and sees osprey again, she's going to remember that moment. Not that it was with me, that it was a moment of experiencing nature going on right there over your head, right there at the dental office in this little tiny town of Sheridan, Oregon. I just thought it was so cool, man. And then coming home the next day was kind of crazy, because as I turned off of the asphalt road to come up the gravel road that leads to our house, there were two brand new baby fawns, like twins, brand new little tiny baby fawns, like tiny. When they're brand new, they are so tiny, and we've been waiting for them. I think the last show I did, the Right on the Left Coast show I did, we had seen the first one. My wife and I saw it together, coming back from town. And we saw the first one, and mom was still licking it. It was that young, just barely walking, and mom was still keeping it, you know, getting it cleaned up. That was really cool. Every year we wait to see the first fawn, because then we know to keep an eye out for the rest of them, and, you know, be a lot of stuff going on, man. But anyway, I hope you are all good, and I mean that. I hope you find some peace, some quiet, and some quiet time just to live and enjoy life. I think that's one thing I've really kind of changed in my life more in the last 4 months, I would say, is making more time for fun and enjoyment and less time for, you know, working, doing work stuff in general. But it's kind of funny. Now the next thing I'm going to tell you is kind of funny. I'll save that for just a minute. So let's skip the walkabout video right now. We will do it either Wednesday night or next Saturday. It's all set, ready to go. We'll do it. Maybe, I'll do this. I'll post that video on Rumble. Maybe I'll do a little narration with it. Yeah, that's what I'll do. So tomorrow, maybe after Hal's show, I will post that video with some voiceover on it, so you can see it, and then we'll do it together on the show either Wednesday or Saturday this coming week. Oh my gosh, man, June has just gone by so fast. It's crazy. It is really crazy here. So now I'm done. I've dealt with the walkabout video. We'll figure that out this coming week. You'll have a chance to check it out yourselves. And if you have questions about anything, you know, I'll bring Rochelle in and have her sit here, and she'll explain some of the plants she did. Cause what the landscaping you're going to see, she did every single bit of that. So hopefully, you know, you understand that whole entire, every single non-native plant you see, Rochelle did that. And her daughter, I'm sure, but it was mostly Rochelle. It's pretty cool. I wanted to talk just a tiny bit about not aging really, but I wanted to share with you guys this little bit of thing that goes on as you get older. And yeah, I mean, I could say aging, old age, you know, and I could start complaining, but I got to tell you, this is the weirdest thing. Like, I've always been pretty dang active. And, you know, everybody knows I had a heart attack last year, and, you know, I've been doing even more stuff to be healthy, like longer time working out, cardio time, committed time, which takes away from other stuff. Like, it takes away from my fun time. It takes away from my other hobby time, and just enjoying the outdoors and stuff here. But it's important. Like, I was thinking today, Jesus. Okay, so I had physical therapy. I have it twice a week. And Friday, I'm not kidding, the guy just about murdered me. No, not really. But he had me work so hard. My arms were beat, like just exhausted. And then I don't have much cartilage in my left knee, but I do treadmill and I do stationary bike. And I was thinking to myself, good Lord, what happens if I can no longer stay in shape? You know, what happens if my knee is so painful that I can't, you know, do the treadmill? I mean, I was looking at an elliptical machine today, thinking, okay, I could do the elliptical because it's low or no impact, really. And, you know, you can still kind of keep going. And I was thinking, I'm going to need that at some point. So I don't know if now's the time or later. I don't know. But my point is, man, you got to keep moving, like all your parts, because this whole shoulder thing, you know, it's not a rotator cuff tear necessarily, but it's because of lack of use. In other words, the muscles around that joint became weakened over decades of not really using that, as much as I do my right arm, for example. And now that it's getting tightened up, man, I just, like, I have so much less pain and more range of motion. And it just feels like, oh, okay, this is going to be okay. I would think, you know, I'm not going to need surgery. This is just going to be fine. But God dang, man, you got to do a lot to get it back in, you know, to get back in shape, and it's harder when you get older. And, you know, tiny things can screw you up for a while. So I don't know if I'm offering any solution to that, except that I think walking probably every day is a good idea. Like, go walk for 20 minutes and make the time to do it. Like, every day. You know, before the heart attack, there'd be some days I'd be like, no, I'm not working out today. You know, just don't want to work out today. Well, now it's that isn't an option. I mean, yeah, it would have to be really extreme for me to say, I'm not going to work out. I'm not doing my cardio today. I mean, I take one day a week off. That's Monday. I don't do nothing on Monday. No workout, no cardio, no nothing. And I wouldn't advise you to go out and start walking, you know, 5 miles every day right off the bat. If you don't move right now, be a good idea to start easy. When I ran, there was this term that they used. They called it LSD running. And I don't mean taking LSD and going for a run. They called it long, slow distance. Long, so go for 3 or 4 or 6 or 10 miles, slow, don't make yourself exhausted, but get the distance in. So you get, you know, spend a bunch of time. And when I started, man, let's not get into it. That wasn't the reason I brought that up. But let's just say, take it easy. Maybe go every other day, or maybe go every third day and go like a mile. Probably if you're not in any good shape at all, it's going to take you 20 minutes to walk a mile. trust me, I know. Even in pretty good shape, let's see, I get almost 4 miles an hour on the tread on an incline. So it's, you know, take it easy, but get out there and get moving. And if you have a limb that you don't use as much as another one, you know, think of something to do with it. Do some exercise with it to keep it from failing. I guess that's my point, is just to keep it from failing. But here's the thing, man. If you don't commit to that time every day, and I know life is hell, it's hectic, and stuff comes in and takes over your time, and there's, you know, you put things aside and you won't think about it, or you'll dismiss it. But if you start committing to it and stick to it, you're going to see results, and I think they're going to be good for you in the long run. Hey, which reminds me, I heard something today that was so funny, and I haven't really kind of thought this out completely yet, but I just thought this was pretty damn funny. I went down to get coffee this morning at the shop, support the locals, you know, and on the radio, you know, weekend radio is kind of crap radio. They talk about stupid stuff and a lot of advertisements. And they asked this question that said, should your employer pay for obesity medicine? And I was like, what? Like, what is that? And apparently now you can get pills that will take weight off, like remove fat. So guess how much these pills are? And if any of you know, I'd be surprised. I don't think any of us, most people who would listen to a Homestead podcast are not, you know, grossly obese, I think. Because I'm not that entertaining. But I do talk about, I think, good food and doing good things. But anyway, this medication is $1,000 a month. Now, just imagine this. So you're going to take a pill that costs you $1,000 because you can't control your eating. But I kind of have a feeling, this is the idea, that they charge $1,000 so that you'll pretty much have to starve the entire month to afford that pill. Because I don't think a lot of people can afford $1,000 of medication a month. Jesus, can you even imagine? Yeah, just hook me up with that medication. What is it? Oh, $1,000? Yeah, I'll take that. I think you can go to Mexico and get your stomach, you know, that stomach lap band or whatever, for like $5,000. Of course, you don't get to stay in the hospital. They bring you in, do the surgery, put you in a hotel, and then you're kind of on your own waking up and stuff. I'm not kidding. I had somebody, a neighbor, do it. It's terrifying, terrifying experience. All right. Oh, just one short thing. I wanted to tell everybody, I actually signed up for the Google Cybersecurity Certification course. One is because I wanted to see what their whole little thing was about. And number two, I really think cybersecurity is important and is getting to be more and more important. Because just imagine, with AI and computing power and all that stuff, we're going to have, in fact, some of my passwords, like the corporation, now you can't have a password. You have to have a passphrase, which actually is a really good idea anyway. But my point here is, with the increase in computing power, which means that hackers are going to have quicker access or ability to hack passwords, you are going to have to also become better at securing your devices wherever they are. Now, my ulterior motive here is, I'm going to be leaving dentistry in the next, I don't know, year to 3 years, I think is my max, really. And I'd like to have something else, some other career that, you know, is different. And I've always been a computer hacker. I have written code. I have hacked computers. I have hacked systems. You know, I have done a lot of this stuff growing up with the computer age, wanting to know what these little machines were going to do and how you make them do that. So I think cybersecurity would be a pretty good potential job for me after I retire from dentistry. If I wanted to do something, you know, I could help out some locals. I could help out, I don't know, get a job with whoever. But anyway, I'm going to take this course. I already signed up. I finished the first week. It was cool. Fairly easy, you know, to start with. But, oh, I wanted to show you it. So let me see. Okay, here it is. Oh, wait, welcome back. Oh, but it doesn't have my password on it. Jesus. That'd be funny. Okay, just think how funny this would be if I actually put up my account information on a cybersecurity certification site. Oh my God. Oh, that was pretty damn funny. Okay, so this is what we're going to do. Let's go to Google and do Google cyber. They do one word, security certification. Okay. Did you mean Google cybersecurity certificate? Yeah, that's what I meant. And now, so if I hit this page... Okay, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to transition off of my browser for just a minute while I look here. Okay, good. All right, so here's the page. So Google Cybersecurity Certificate. Okay, now I'll just tell you. So you can go look it up yourself, of course, if you're interested. But here's the deal. If you register now, it's free for 2 weeks. After 2 weeks, you have to pay $50 a month to use their knowledge base, their teaching program. So $50 a month, and you can work at your own pace. So they say it would take you, I think they said it'd take you 6 months to finish if you did this 7 hours a week. So if you do it 7 hours a day, it'd take you 6 days. I don't know. It'd take you a month or two. So this is interesting. And the reason I bring this up is because there's a lot of people who want some other skill that they could, you know, they could have a second job or change their career or whatever. And I think there's a lot of people like that. Not only that, there's 750,000 open cybersecurity jobs right now. Oh, and plus I want to tell you this. This is kind of wild. Man, and this is, I haven't even touched the thing I want to talk about today. Which is good, because we can always do it later. 750 open jobs. Oh, and here's the crazy thing. So I was, of course, talking to my family here. By family, I mean everybody who lives here on a homestead, which the number is getting bigger all the time. And it's awesome. We have the best people contribute to this homestead. It's fantastic. But so Sheck was telling me that his buddy, okay, Oregon had a breach of information 2 weeks ago, and they told us all basically, hey, you better go to all the credit bureaus and shut down your credit report, because anybody who applies for credit with your information won't be able to get any credit. That's how bad this breach was. Well, this guy who does not work for the state of Oregon, but works for other, he works for a corporation or a group or independently gives security, cybersecurity to different businesses. Well, he had one that had the exact same breach because it was it's a group that is taking holding data ransom, and so he had to work he worked 7 or 10 days straight, late nights, early mornings, just trying to, you know, lock down everything. So this is something that, you know, I think you could put to work pretty much wherever you are. And who knows, maybe you'd be able to work from home. That'd be awesome. I would think that would be a good possible option for me. And I love computer stuff anyway, so I think it would work good. Let's see, what else do I have? Because I don't know if I have time. I'm going to get into the big thing. Okay, yeah. So I wanted to talk about wheat and flour because I think this is really important. It just came to my attention in the last couple weeks. But now that I've kind of researched it a little bit, it kind of blows me away. So this is what I want to tell you first off, is that any product that you eat which is made from wheat or wheat products like flour, I would almost have to say there's 100% chance it is poisoned. And it's poisoned by stuff that is really not good for you or anybody else. Now, I ran across this when I was listening to RFK Jr.'s interview with Joe Rogan. And they were talking about glyphosates and atrazine. They're both herbicides. Glyphosates, I think everybody knows, pretty much the basic component of Roundup, which is a weed killer that they spray on food. You know, they didn't used to spray it on food. They used to wear a backpack, so they would plant a row of corn, and they'd put backpacks on with Roundup in it, and they would walk down the row of corn, and if they saw a weed, they'd just spray the weed. Well, and then Monsanto got smart and, you know, genetically modified the food or the plants that produce food so that they were resistant to their own product Roundup, which was great, right? Because now you could just plant the corn, you could crop dust the entire field with Roundup, and it would kill the weeds and it wouldn't kill the corn. And once the corn was big enough, it just outcompete the weeds, so you didn't have to reapply it, or, you know, didn't have to, spot kill weeds. Corn grows pretty damn tall, and once it gets going, it'll outcompete the weeds, so you don't have to worry about it. Well, guess what? Somewhere along the line, let me see. I'm going to put my glasses on so I can see. Poison on mature wheat, which means in your flour and cereal and cookies, etc., etc. Charles Benbrook, PhD, who published the paper on the mounting use of glyphosate, says the practice of spraying glyphosate on wheat prior to harvest, known as desiccating, began in Scotland in the 1980s. So let me explain this to you. So not only did they figure out that it worked as a weed killer, but then they thought, well, if we spray it on wheat that's fully mature, ready to go to market, it dries the wheat out so dry that even in the rain, we could harvest the wheat and take it to market. So that's what they started doing. They started spraying these poisons directly on wheat, and it would dry it out so that they could harvest right away. They didn't have to wait till the humidity was just right in the wheat, or the wheat had a certain amount of dryness. They could just spray it on the wheat and harvest it. And it's not like it gets cleaned. And I think that stuff is kind of oil-based anyway, so there's not a good way to clean it off of the wheat before it gets processed. I mean, maybe there's some... I'm not saying there's no cleaning process that goes into cleaning the wheat berries, but I'm saying you're not getting this poison off that easy. It's going into the food. And they've actually done studies and seen that pretty much everybody has some form of a derivative of glyphosate in their systems. Like 90% of human beings, like in the world, have glyphosate in their system somewhere. In a 2018 keynote presentation, Hayes explained, oh, here, let me put this up. Why is Glock? Now, this was interesting. I actually typed this. Why is glyphosate sprayed on crops right before harvest? And look, there's literally an article said, why is glyphosate sprayed on crops right before harvest? And that's where I got a lot of this information. So I'm going to leave that up so you can see it. And I'll just read from my notes here what I took from this article. And this is kind of horrifying, too. And if you think about what's going on in our world, in our society, here in the United States, and I know other first world countries as well, and probably third world countries, because we take advantage of them by, you know, using their resources, basically, and exposing them to the same hells, but even worse. In a 2018 keynote presentation, Hayes explained that exposure to atrazine induces the activation of an enzyme called aromatase. Aromatase converts androgens, which are involved in male sexual development. Follow me here. Aromatase converts androgens, which are involved in male sexual development, to different forms of the female hormone estrogen. In the atrazine-exposed frogs, aromatase converted testosterone into estrogen, leading to the feminization of male frogs. According to Hayes, mammals, including humans, will not have the same extreme egg-producing reaction as some reptiles and amphibians do when exposed to atrazine. However, he noted that aromatase induced by atrazine exposure promotes breast cancer and prostate cancer. So check this out. So atrazine, not only, so it said it feminized, it just said feminization of male frogs, but actually it goes on to say that a certain percentage, I forget what percentage, see if I can find it. The author stressed that herbicide is a potent endocrine disruptor, even at low levels. Previous studies showed adverse effects that included hermaphroditism, reduced testicular volume, and lowered testosterone. The herbicide is also associated with both demasculinization and feminization of male amphibians. The study examined long-term effects of atrazine on reproductive function in a genetically male population of African clawed frogs. In fact, aromatase is so important as a cause of breast cancer that one of the leading treatments for breast cancer is a non-steroidal aromatase inhibitor called letrozole, Hayes said. The developer of letrozole is a pharmaceutical giant, Novartis AG. Interestingly, in 2003, Toxicological Profile, the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, lists Novartis Crop Protection Incorporated as one of the six companies registered to produce products containing atrazine. Novartis Crop Protection was an affiliate of Novartis AG. In 2000, Novartis spun off its crop protection and seed sectors, merging them with AstraZeneca Agrochemicals to form Syngenta. Today, Syngenta is the chief manufacturer of atrazine, according to the Center for Food Safety. Syngenta was acquired by ChemChina in 2017. I'm not necessarily trying to start some conspiracy theory here, but if you were thinking about taking over a country, I mean, wouldn't you just try and convert all the males who are usually the warring faction into females? And I'm not saying, ladies, that you're not, you know, couldn't be as violent as men. I'm sure that you can, and worse. I've seen, you know, women protecting their children before. I wouldn't want to be any in between any of that. But, yeah, well, a couple of things. If you demasculinize males, lower their testosterone, lower their sperm count, somehow, you know, also decrease their gonad size, you're basically getting rid of the population because they're no longer going to reproduce. And if you look at what's happened in our society with this huge movement toward transgenderism, and just in general, you look at the males you see today, you don't see what we used to call manly men out there. Very few younger manly men. Because, well, number one, look at this. You're chemically castrating them, and socially we've been castrating men for decades now. And, you know, few people have resisted that trend, have kind of fought back constantly against that demasculinization of men. So, so these studies, in fact, 22 independent researchers from several different countries have examined the effects of atrazine exposure on various species, such as fish, reptiles, amphibians, mammals, and birds. Let me get a drink here. These studies consistently reported similar findings, including the absence of sperm production, demasculinization, and feminization as a result of atrazine exposure. He said, in fact, 22 independent researchers from several different countries have examined the effects of atrazine exposure on various species such as, I already read that. These studies consistently reported similar findings, including the absence of sperm production. I already said that. It looks to me like they know exactly how to poison the population of the Earth and make it unable to reproduce. The Environmental Protection Agency memorandum on the use of atrazine, published in July of 2022, noted that the herbicide is registered for use in agricultural crops, including field corn, sweet corn, sorghum, sugarcane, macadamia nuts, and guava. It is also registered for non-agricultural uses such as nursery or ornamental plantings, turf, and rights of way. The memo noted that field corn, sweet corn, sorghum, and sugarcane are the most important agricultural use sites for the chemical. Now think about this. So not only are you, you know, having it sprayed directly on your wheat, but it's ending up in these fields where they produce sugar. And of course, look at what, you know, our kids, the youngest generation today, eat and are addicted to like crazy. Like it's a drug. They got to have their sugar. And pretty much look at the crops that are affected. All of the crops that produce sugar, even guava, actually, they can produce sugar from, but sugar cane, sorghum, sweet corn, field corn, you know, corn is corn syrup, for example. You know, look at how many products that you can buy today that have corn syrup in them. Let's see, the memo noted, The evaluation found that all three herbicides are likely to adversely affect species listed under the Endangered Species Act or their habitats. Now, let me get to this glyphosate real quick. The main ingredient in Monsanto's Roundup herbicide is recognized as the world's most widely used weed killer. What is not so well known is that farmers use glyphosate on crops such as wheat, oats, edible beans, and other crops right before harvest, raising the concerns that the herbicide could get into food products. So I kind of concentrated on the wheat today because, for crying out loud, how many products, and this is why I think people in the past have said, don't buy processed foods because you don't know what's in it. I mean, number one, they use all kinds of chemicals in processed foods to help preserve them until you finally get around to making it to eat. But here's the other thing is, you know, all of this flour, and I'm not saying that there's any easy solution to this. I'm going to tell you what's going on here at the homestead here in just a minute, and I better make it fast because we're running out of time. The Right. I have, just a quote, I have talked with millers of conventionally produced grain, and they all agree it is very difficult to source oats, wheat, flax, triticale, which have not been sprayed with the glyphosate prior to harvest, he said. It's a don't ask, don't tell policy in the industry. Earhart also says that crops grown to produce seed are not usually sprayed with glyphosate prior to harvest because this can damage the seed germination, in other words, kill its DNA. Wiebe shares similar concerns. Consumers don't realize when they buy wheat products like flour, cookies, and bread, they are getting glyphosate residues in those products, he said. It's barbaric to put glyphosate in food a few days before you harvest it. Wiebe believes that the use of glyphosate on wheat may be connected to the rise in celiac disease. We've seen an explosion of gluten intolerance, he said. What's really going on here? Can you imagine the public's response if they knew what glyphosate is, if they knew that glyphosate is being sprayed on the oats and their Cheerios only weeks before it is manufactured? Residues of glyphosate have been found in wheat flour. Last year, Ransom reported to the U.S. Wheat Quality Council that tests on flour samples from the U.S. and Canada found that all had traces of glyphosate. So they have some level that they say is a safe level of glyphosate. Don't believe it. It's just the government saying, you know, keep it under this level so people don't literally just sit down and die. I mean, it's obviously way below the level that if you eat it, it immediately kills you. But there's no safe level of these things. Let's see what else. That is going to about do it. I got 1 minute left. Jesus. Okay, so let me just tell you this. So this is what we're doing here. Crystal has done such a good job of converting kind of everybody, getting everybody more on the eating raw foods, eating healthy foods, locally grown, locally sourced foods. So we're buying local wheat berries and going to start milling our own flour and not buy any store-bought products because it's unsafe. Now, I'm not saying everybody can do that, but I want to bring your attention to just how dangerous some of the foods that we eat are. Thank you. I hope you found something I said today interesting. Hope you enjoyed the show. Remember, catch Hal Anthony tomorrow at 3 p.m. Eastern Sunday, Behind the Woodshed with Hal Anthony. He'll open up a can of whoop-ass on the entire world. Be a part of it. And thanks for joining me, you guys. I'll see you on Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern myself. Thanks. See you next time on Right on the Left Coast podcast. Thank you for listening.